You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
So we have Alex Lacrimore, who is a music supervisor, composer, and music director on Broadway. Alex has worked side-by-side with popular composers like Lin-Manuel Miranda on Hamilton and Pasquin Paul on Dear Evan Hansen. Other shows he's been a part of is In the Heights, Wicked, Legally Blonde, 9 to 5, Annie, and several others. He has also won 3 Tonys for his work on Hamilton, In the Heights, and Dear Evan Hansen. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you, Mason?
Good, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on here.
Can you talk about how you got to where you are?
Yeah, I feel like I got to where I was. I mean, on the mechanical side, I think playing piano from a young age, I started playing piano when I was 4, kind of allowed me to kind of get an opportunity to learn classical music, but also learn how to play pop music, learn how to accompany singers. And it gave me a lot of foundation for theory and for harmony and all the tools that are good to have if you're wanting to be a music director. And I guess I always had a fun time leading musical groups, either just being the one to put bands together or wanting to play charts or whatever that is. So I think that coupled with just a love for musical theater, all those things together kind of came together for me. And add to that my love of making music, my love of collaboration, and and my luck of meeting very, very talented people along the way who would ask me to join them on their projects. That all got me to do what I love to do, which is what I'm doing right now.
So I've heard several places that you have hearing loss. How did you get to work on Broadway through that?
So my hearing, I've never quite known what the correct term it is, because I've never really called it a hearing disability, but I suppose it is. And you could call it a handicap as well. All this to say is that for me, I've always just known what it's like to hear this way. So I always tell people, listen, we listen to the same music, right? If a stereo is playing, you and I might be listening to the same song, but I'm just hearing the stereo a little softer than you are. And that's the way I describe it. So it's not like I'm not hearing the music. So whatever my perception of what music sounds like, it's what I've been perceiving ever since I was a child. So that has never really changed for me. So I've just learned to deal with it. I've just learned to make that just a part of my life and try to compensate for it in the ways that I could, whether it's wearing hearing aids. When I was a kid, it was about sitting in front of the class to make sure I heard everything the teacher said. When I work with people, sometimes it's letting them know that I have a hearing disability that makes it harder for me to hear certain frequencies when I'm mixing in an album, for example. So I think it's just a mixture of just defiance in a way, you know, not taking no for an answer and not being stopped from doing something that I love to do. So I credit my parents for being very supportive and never making me feel like I couldn't do as something that was really important to me. So I guess the short answer is you just learn to deal with it and not feel sorry for yourself and just move on.
So you're known as a composer, orchestrator, and music supervisor. Could you talk about what you do in each of those different roles?
Yeah. And it's hard to explain the different jobs that in not musical terms, but I'll try my best. So I would say a music director in a Broadway musical tends to be the person who is in charge of the music, being the liaison between the music department and perhaps the directing department or the choreography department or lighting, what have you. Teaching the music to the singers, perhaps conducting the show 8 times a week, but also dealing with the schedules, the rehearsal schedules, and if there's new cast members joining, coming up with the schedules and the methods for teaching them, and dealing with the band and communicating with them. It's basically anything having to do with music for the show goes through the music director. An arranger, for me, I describe it as very kind of big picture thinking on a song. And that is talking about perhaps how the song feels in terms of tempo and perhaps adjusting the key for a certain singer, suggesting, hey, let's do 2 verses instead of 3 verses, perhaps coming up with a new introduction or a new ending, recycling motifs, kind of, like I said, a very macro view of stuff. And to me, the orchestration is very micro. That's where you get very detailed and you get very specific about, hey, how many instruments will there be in this orchestra? And if the strings are playing, how many violins will we have? Will we have violas or won't we? And if there's a guitar playing, will the guitar be an acoustic? Will it be an electric? Will it be a ukulele? Will it be a banjo? It's getting very detailed and writing down the notes for every single part to play and making decisions about who plays when, whether they're playing in harmony, whether they're playing counter lines, what have you. But it's a lot more intensive, I think, because it's very OCD in terms of, you know, being very, very meticulous, very exacting, and trying to translate the music. And all these jobs I described, I think the main goal is to storytell through the music, to be a storyteller. So however you want to interpret that, whether you're a music director talking to your actors, whether you're an arranger talking to your composer about how a song should feel, or whether you're an orchestrator trying to elevate the emotion that's happening on stage, it's all about, at the end, telling a story.
So when Lynn or Paskin Paul or whoever hands you a song, what is there and not there? And what do you do to it?
It depends. Every composer works differently. There are some composers that write everything down in a piano vocal chart and are very detailed about what they want the piano part to be. And there are other times where the composer just invents the song and they never write anything down. They just sit at the piano and perform it for you and sing it. And then it becomes incumbent on the music director to get that notated. Sometimes I do it myself. Sometimes I'll have people do it for me. And then from there, it's about translating and executing. And it's about potentially making suggestions about other vocal harmonies, perhaps saying, hey, have you thought about using this chord there instead? Or saying, hey, I feel like this ending isn't totally satisfying. What about if we did this? What about if we did that? So sometimes people are very collaborative with that and they let you into the process. Other times people are very specific and say, no, this is what I want it to be. And as an arranger, it's your job to go with that flow. It's your job to fulfill their vision, because at the end of the day, they're the composer. They have the final word, and you're just working to help uphold their vision.
So when did you realize Hamilton was going to be a big thing in your life and a whole thing for the world to enjoy?
You know, I have to say, I'm trying to figure out how best to say this. You know, I knew as I was working on the show that it was the best piece that Lin-Manuel had ever written. I knew that it was something that I was extremely proud of and that I loved deeply and was very passionate about, but I never predicted any of the impact and the buzz that the show had. And even still, as it was all happening, what was most important to me was making sure that I was still maintaining the work and the show at the highest level I could, trying to perform the best shows possible, trying to make the show sound good, both in performance and in terms of audio sound design and taking notes and being just very on top of the maintenance of the show. So I say that because I never really I would never say, oh my God, this is the, look at the way the show is touching people. We're this and we're that. Like, that's not my job. Like, you can't control what people will say about your show. People will feel about it the way they want to feel about it. And it's neither right, neither wrong. And you can't control it. All you can control is what your contribution is and how much love you give to the piece and how much you nurture it. And the rest takes care of itself. That being said, you know, it's hard to deny that the show definitely has touched a lot of people and that there's a lot of love around it. And I'm always amazed by that and always extremely honored by that, because, you know, it's not lost on me that, you know, not all Broadway shows get this much attention. And I feel very, very lucky that I got to be part of this, that I've been around this show for as long as I have, and I've seen it come together from the beginning stages. And to know that I've been there on the journey the whole time, I can't describe to you how important that is in my life and how grateful I am for that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Was it hard to maintain a quote-unquote normal life while working on these Broadway sensations?
For me, it's about trying to find the balance of, yes, how to have a normal life and to do the show at the same time. And I will say it gets difficult to keep the schedules straight. I find it hard sometimes to meet all the demands that are made of you from people either wanting to communicate or needing your eyes on something, or even me just being home and watching TV with my wife. It becomes hard to balance all those things, not only because the demands get to be great, but also because I reach my limits. You know, I get to a point where like, oh, this is, I feel like I'm going to not be able to see straight because I'm so tired and I feel so overworked and taxed. And you want to be able to make space for yourself and have time to relax and time to recharge. And I'm very much a perfectionist. I am a workaholic. I love what I do. And I will sacrifice sleep if it means that the chart will be that much more complete in my mind. So I definitely tend to push myself, and that's my own doing and that's my own fault. But at the same time, I would like to think that it's because I'm so relentless in my quest for quote unquote perfection. That's why I get to work on the projects that I get to work on. So it's a double-edged sword, I'll tell you.
Does each show change your perception of music and storytelling? And if so, how?
I think with every project I do and with every year that passes that I get the good fortune to be on this earth, I get to hone my skill a little bit more. So that is to say, I do feel like as I've gotten older, as I've gotten more experience and get to work with other shows, I become a little bit more, I just gain more and more knowledge and I'm able to use it more. So I think for me, I'm always learning. And with every project that I do, I learn something that I didn't know before. And I carry that new knowledge to the next project that I do. So I see us all as ever evolving beings, right? We're always trying to grow and always trying to learn and to adapt. And for me, it's just important to try to keep my antenna up and to continue to try to learn and try to assimilate and try to stay on top of the latest software and try to stay current. You know, it's a task at times, but at the end of the day, it's about doing what I love and trying to keep myself open so that things always feel fresh, things always feel new, and that I continue to develop as a musician and as an artist.
What's the best advice you've gotten in your career?
Ah, that's a great question. You know, it's very hard for me to, I have a hard time saying this is the best thing or this is like my number one whatever. But I do feel like I'm lucky that I've gotten teachers that saw something in me as a pianist, as a musician, and bestowed their knowledge upon me and taught me what I needed to know at that moment, whether it was how to communicate more clearly with the singers that you're working with, how to lead a band or how to, I think for me, it's just a lot of paying attention and trying to learn from mistakes. And also when you step out of your lane, if someone tells you that you're doing so, hopefully they have a way to do it that's diplomatic and good constructive criticism, but being able to listen to that and take that advice and go with it. So, you know, I guess this is the long answer I just gave it to you, but the short answer, I suppose that at some point in my life, I've been able to be put in my place in the right way and be able to be told, hey, you're stepping on shoes. You are pushing a little bit too hard and you need to back down a little bit. That was very important for me to hear that, because I am very, I can be very strong-headed at times, and I will push and push and push if there's something that I believe in. And there's times that you need to take a step back and let other people lead and let other things happen and, only really push if the time is right. So I think I learned the hard way when I need to kind of just take it down a notch, and that's been very important for me.
So have you benefited more from education or experience with shows?
I think it's a little bit of both. I tend to, I would probably say it leans more on the experience, meaning with every show that I did, I gained more knowledge about how a show gets put together. I would learn something that, like I said, that I would take to the next project. But I didn't get a formal education in musical theater. You know, I didn't study musical theater as in the educational higher learning sense. But I definitely learned about it just by doing, just by being in shows and playing shows and leading shows. All that became part of the process for me. So I think that that's where I get most of my knowledge. Yeah.
So what are you doing during quarantine? Are you working on any projects?
Yeah, I surprisingly feel just as busy now as I did before the quarantine. I think at the top of the shutdown, many people were able to just take a breather and take a step back and, try to take stock of where we were. And I'm very fortunate in that my wife and I have been able to stay healthy. My family, my mom, dad, and sister all tested positive for COVID about a month ago, which is worrisome. And they're getting better. And I'm trying to stay positive that they'll be okay. They haven't needed to be hospitalized or anything. And that's a scary thing to go through, especially when they're so far away. If things are going okay for you in the quarantine, then I am fortunate in that I've been working on projects that have deadlines that are set for 2021. So they're full steam ahead. I get calls about things to be involved in, whether it's wonderful interviews like this or whether it's about master classes here or listening to this mix for this movie project that I'm working on, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like I've learned how to really, really be at home and use my home studio and continue to create and to work. So I'm very fortunate in that things are good here at the home front, and I still get to kind of do my thing. And I know that's not the case for everybody, so I don't take it for granted in the least.
So in our last few minutes, is there anything you want to add?
No, I just wanted to say it's a pleasure to be on here, Mason. You seem like a very mature young man, and I can tell that you love musical theater and that you love what you do. And you have a big fan and our mutual friend, Ana Luisos, and everybody who has been working with you and to set up this interview has all made wonderful comments about what a pleasant young man you are. So I'm glad to experience that firsthand. So thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much.
That's it for season 3 of Real Talk with me, Mason Bray. Thank you to all of our guests that we've had so far, and I hope to have you here in a few weeks to hear some more.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.